going to close Spotify down. Let's turn my email off.
I can just imagine you have like loads open. So
oh,
it's probably
55 tabs. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I've just closed them all down. Yeah, we've got one tab open now, and that is just this.
Sweet. Awesome.
Welcome to the Actor and Agent, aka The Dirt or The Skinny, with me, Jen,
and me, Snezhina. Brilliant, cool. Well, wow, okay, so we are recording. I am always really excited for any guests that we have, and I'm going to try not to fangirl too much just because I've watched so many webinars and stuff recently over this last year. It seems really weird to see you right there. But we have an amazing guest today. He has been on The Stranger on Netflix. He has been in Years and Years, which was created by Russell T Davies. It was really big in the UK. I'm not sure about over abroad. But he's been on Casualty, Corrie, Cradle to the Grave, which I actually really enjoyed. And I did see you on it. And so many more things. And not to mention, which we will get into later, the UK's largest professional and social network for actors, which is called Act On This, which I'm very much a big fan of. And he's also the first to promote like a positive psychology program for actors, which is the Bulletproof Actor. It is Ross Grant. Hi.
You've done some homework there, Jen. I don't think anybody, you've clearly been on IMDb. You've probably been on LinkedIn.
Yeah, been on everything.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me. It's very rare that I get to sit on this side of a podcast for the last 11, 12 years almost. Wow. Yeah, I've been podcasting almost every week with me being the host and like asking actors questions and casting directors and agents and writers and producers and directors and stuff. So it's nice to sit back with no pressure today. All the pressure's on you guys, basically. You know, I'll just sit here and answer whatever you want.
Sounds good. I'm all over that. No, well, it's good. It's great. Ever since pretty much the first episode, I think we were already talking about how great it would be to have you on this podcast, to be honest.
That's true, so. Yeah.
Amazing.
You're going to be episode 10, so
whoop. I'll be on every episode. I'll just come back every week now. to get this much praise, I'm fine. I can deal with that.
Awesome, sweet. I love that. Well, how's this week been for you, Ross? Like, what have you been up to? What have you been doing?
Oh, God. Do you know what? Like, all the weeks since, it seems like since like last March, since the initial sort of lockdown, it seems like every single week for me is just blended into one. Like, I can't remember what day of the week it actually is or what's going on. I had a bit of a moment at the start of lockdown with ActOnThis.tv. Because at the start of lockdown, obviously, I had to go from doing everything in person. So I would normally record podcasts every week and I'd bring, you know, a guest literally into my house, into my kitchen. We would sit at the kitchen table. I'd record a podcast with them. And obviously, all of that stopped as soon as Boris went, no one's going out. Please stay at home. So I had to almost instantly go, right, well, obviously, everything's got to, you know, go online. What am I going to do? And I thought, you know, actors need more support now than kind of ever because it seemed like our industry was imploding. Theatre particularly was just like, you know, there was so much panic there with what's going to go on and people's jobs and stuff like that. So I thought, right, how can I create more content than I've ever created before? And I started doing two live Zoom calls with guests a week. So I went from doing like a podcast every couple of weeks to, eight every, you know, two a week, eight a month for 16 weeks. And I look back now because I only do one a week now. It's still more than we used to do, you know, pre lockdown. But I look back and go, I don't even know how I did that. 16 weeks, like, you know, 32 guests.
Madness.
Yeah. It was crazy. So, I'm kind of like, I'm on a bit of a treadmill of content. So like every week, you know, I'm booking, like you guys, imagine you're realizing doing this podcast, like it's not easy to book guests. It's not easy to schedule everything in, to edit stuff, to promote stuff. And even once you've done something, you know, you've completed a piece of content, that's almost like the easy bit. So every episode of this you do, you've done it. And then it's like people think, oh, right, okay, that's the hard work done. No, it's not. Getting people to listen or watch is far harder. It's like work only just begins once you have done what is seemingly, you know, kind of like the hard work, but it's not. That's the easy part. So it's it's kind of rinse and repeat. It has been for the last year for me, where every week has basically been the same. so this week has been no different, but this makes it nicer. This is a little bit different because I don't normally get to do this, where I get to speak to other people and, you know, and just like have a chat, as opposed to me, you know, having a ask all the right questions and sort of, you know, get everything, all the secrets out of these casting directors that we get on and all that sort of stuff. So it's nice to just sit here with a coffee and chill out with you guys, really.
totally. Yeah. I know, it's nice. Are you guys actually, because I'm including you in this, Najin, as well, are you guys like watching anything specific at the moment? Like, is there something that you're like really into, like TV wise, or just out of curiosity? Because I always find that interesting what people do.
I'll let you go first, because I basically don't think I've watched anything in about 6 months.
I'm not surprised, to be fair. Yeah, I'm not surprised, to be honest. Go on, Snesh.
You know, I always have something I'm watching.
Of course.
We just started Shadow and Bone on Netflix yesterday. Which is cool. Yeah, it's kind of like a little bit like a Western, a little bit like London in the 1800s, a little bit like piratey. So it's cool. You don't really know what's going on yet. I haven't read the books, but
no, me neither.
Yeah, it seems cool. It's gripped me so far in 2 episodes. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, like it so
nice.
Far.
Oh, sweet.
Nice. No, I haven't cool. seen it. I haven't seen it. The last thing
just came out, yesterday. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. No. I think the last thing that I actually got to kind of like get really. Do you know what? It was probably. Oh, and this is going way back as well. I don't even know if this was in lockdown or not. There was a Netflix show, called. I'm sure it's called You, about a guy.
Yes.
Who was like ended up being a serial killer, but didn't really mean to. Yeah. I related a lot with that guy. Not that I'm a serial killer, but I was like,
serial killer, stalker, what?
I'm like, look, this is just, it all just went a bit wrong. Just like, you know, just got into relationships with the wrong women. And then, you know, here you go. Next thing I know, like, you know, I'm a serial killer. I just thought it was such a good show. And I'm sure there's a third season of that. I watched season one and two.
Yeah, and, it hasn't come out yet. It's coming.
You spoke some magic words there. I think anything to do with serial killers or something like that, Snajina and I probably watched it, to be fair.
Okay. Making a murderer, you know, not fiction, but incredible. I mean, what's even happened to those guys? Stephen Avery, is he still in prison or what?
Still in prison. Like, what is going on?
I have no idea.
But have you watched, Ross, and I know Snajina's going to go mad when I say this, The Jinx?
No. So, I haven't watched anything. I don't get a chance to watch anything these days.
This was years ago. So this is like a documentary, but it's like the most satisfying documentary. And I'm stealing your words, Snajina, because that's how you told it to me. It's the most satisfying documentary I've ever watched in my entire life. And I wish I'd never seen it so I could watch it again for fresh. It's so good.
Oh,
and
maybe
it's murder, obviously.
I should try and watch that.
It's really good.
It's all got dark at the start of this podcast. Mm. Serial killers and murder straight away.
To be fair.
Welcome.
Yeah, you're welcome. that's kind of the way it goes. For me, I've been watching I'm episode 4 of this series called Flight Attendant. I did bring it up to Sabina the other day.
I've heard a lot about it, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it's really quirky. It's very different. Very, very different. Yeah. I really like it. I really like it a lot. It's like, it's very, it's really quirky for such heavy material. And you're kind of like, does this should be funny? I don't know.
It's it hits really different dark. Beats. So it's very weird, but it's good because it's fresh, you know?
Yeah, and I love Michelle Gomez. She's just awesome because I used to watch Green Wing years ago and she was Sue White, this crazy admin Scottish lady, and she'd just run around and she'd like ride a camel or whatever. And now she's this kind of like dark killer woman and I'm just like, who are you? Anyway, sorry, sidebar. Back to chatting normally. Ross, how did you kind of get started? Like, did you one day have an epiphany, be like, oh yeah, I want to be an actor, or was it a slow burn? How did you start?
Do you know what? I was just thinking about this the other day, and in terms of being an actor, I think that came a little bit sort of later in my early teens, but initially, I'll never forget, and I don't know the ages of you guys, or if you will have seen this, but growing up for me, Michael Jackson was like just my idol, right? Before it all got a bit weird later on in life, and we'll never really know what really kind of went on in his personal life or anything like that. But as a performer, as a kid, I mean, I was obsessed with this guy from like 4 years old, absolutely obsessed. And I went to the cinema, my mum and my brother's 6 years older than me. So I was about four, he was about 10. And my mum would take us to the cinema every weekend, a local cinema, the local Curzon cinema. And it's still there today. It's not a cinema anymore, but I walk past it on the way to the gym every morning. So it's quite nostalgic. And I remember like yesterday going into that cinema I can still smell it. It had a very like interesting smell to it. And watching Michael Jackson's Moonwalker. I don't know if you ever saw the film Moonwalker by Michael Jackson.
I have, actually. Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
What a masterpiece, MJ. I mean, like in today's standards, it'd be interesting to watch it now and see if it actually is any good. But just as a it was almost like a part documentary, part film, part fiction kind of thing with Michael in loads of different scenarios, saving kids from drug dealers 1 minute, and then he's dancing with an animated rabbit the next minute, and like an actual rabbit. Oh God. This sounds weird.
I'm getting flashbacks. So yeah.
But honestly, I was just like, oh my God. Like, I want to, whatever I do in my life, I need to be on a stage. And there's clearly something missing in all of us actors where we're like, there's something that's like, we're just craving some kind of attention that maybe we're not getting from somewhere else in our life. I'm sure we're all a bit broken like that. But after seeing that, I was like, wow, like I just became obsessed with just kind of performing, I guess, really. And I'd learn all Michael Jackson dancing. And I remember I was talking to a friend the other day. He said, when did you get into sort of like, you know, entrepreneurialism? I said, it's probably always kind of been in me. I remember on holiday when I realized that there was a group of people, you know, when your parents are always like, you know, you're at like a holiday little disco and you know, like a local bed and breakfast thing, and then your parents, you know, they have a little bit to drink, and then they go, oh Ross, do you Michael Jackson? And you're only about 7 or 8 and you're like, oh God. But I said, no, I don't want to do it. They're like, but I knew I wanted some Lego. And I said, right, well, if everyone throws a pound in, I'll dance like Michael Jackson. I remember earning 11 quid. Got 11 pounds that night, did a bit of Billie Jean, little bit of a moonwalk, and was like, right, wait a minute, I can now get paid to perform. Holy shit. Like, you know, I think I was probably about 7 or 8 at that point. Wow. And then that was me then. I was just like, this is what I want to do. And then I didn't know what I wanted to go into. I've never really been a singer or a dancer bar emulating Michael Jackson. And it was in my sort of like in the first couple of years of secondary school where my drama teacher was dead supportive. Mike Parker, if you're out there, you're a legend. And he had some contacts. So over here, we used to have children's ITV, CITV. Do you remember that's like a kids channel
CITV,
that you'd watch
yes.
after school? And yeah. There was a show on CITV called Children's Ward. It's like a children's hospital where every week there would be like, you know, the scouts would go camping and you knew the fire was going to blow up and they'd all end up like in hospital. And I remember he had a contact at Granada, this TV company over here, who were giving people, you know, we're finding the actors for CITV. And he just kind of put me forward and we went and did some workshops with them and that sort of stuff. So that's how I got my first couple of jobs on TV when I was sort of like 12, 13. And then I was like, right, this is what I want to do. Still stayed on, did school, did my A-levels. But I was like, you know, I'm only doing my A-levels really to, you know, I don't know really why I did them, just as a backup.
Tick a box.
You know, you're all told to have a backup. And then I went to drama school. Left drama school, realised that actually it hadn't prepared me at all for getting a job in the industry. Like, you know, did everything wrong for 4 years. Signed with all the wrong agents. Couldn't get an audition to save my life. And then I went, right, I should probably learn a bit more about this industry. And I phoned up all the casting directors in Manchester where I am. And remember, this was like 2005. No one had a website that was any good back then. I've always been a geek, making people's websites and stuff on my own. And I phoned around a few casting directors and said, listen, you've not got a website. I'll make you one. I won't charge you a penny for it. It'll look miles better than the one you've got, but I want to come and do it from your office. I'll sit in the corner. I'll stay out of the way, but I need to learn about casting because I'm clearly doing this all wrong. I'm supposed to have been to one of the best drama schools in the country and I can't get an audition to save my life.
Wow.
Michael Jackson, massive shout out to him. Not the King of Pop. Isn't that ironic? Isn't that weird?
that is so ironic.
But I've never even like made the connection. I ended up working for Michael Jackson, the casting director. He's married to Beverly Keough, who was, you know, still is to this day one of the, you know, biggest casting directors in TV. She was casting massive stuff back then. And I went in to do the website. Michael said, right, come in tomorrow. And I never got to start the website. He just straight away on day one, he said, you're going to cast this commercial for this golf company. So he threw me right into the deep end. I had no idea what I was doing. He obviously, it wasn't me casting it. You know, I was just a casting assistant. Michael just wanted to just throw me in. And to cut a long story short, I'm indebted to Michael and Beverly. I stayed in that office for 2 years. I started working with Beverly as a casting assistant, you know, doing all the availability checks with agents and organizing schedules and you know, booking rooms at Spotlight and reading in auditions. And I learned so much that I implemented into my own career. And I started booking work myself. I got an agent thanks to doing that as well and really understanding the industry. And it was at that point where I thought, if I can put this online, I can save actors 5 years that I've just spent getting it all wrong. And that's how Acts on This started. And that was 12 years ago. You know, I thought, right, I'm going to just start sitting down and talking to people. And my first couple of jobs I got on TV, I think my first job was about 6 lines on Emmerdale. I remember speaking to the director afterwards, great director called Tim O'Mara. And I was like, Tim, fancy recording a podcast with me? And he was like, this is back in like, when would this have been? Like 2011? No one even knew what a podcast was, really. And I remember we recorded it on the phone. It was so ghetto. It wasn't like this. Literally,
wow.
I recorded a phone call. And then I would phone other people and just, you know, go, right, will you record this phone call with me? And it started off so lo-fi, like no technology really at all. Things have moved on a lot now with, you know, technology and how accessible it all is. But yeah, I just sat down, had quality conversations, learnt loads, and, you know, continued to beg people to be a part of it. They did, thankfully. A lot of people did, you know, did get involved. And now today, I no longer have to beg, but it's been 11 years of work.
I was about to say, I don't think you have to beg too much anymore. At least people know, you know, who you are.
Well, I think they know it's legit because it's been around so long, you know. It's not like, there's a lot of like snake oil stuff being sold in this industry. There's so many people, you know, I'm seeing 21-year-old life coaches pop up and I'm like, you've not had a life yet. Like, you know, I mean, like, come on. Like, you know, and there's a lot of actors promising, setting things up. And I'm all for actors being entrepreneurial, setting up services that help other actors, but just be honest and be authentic with it. Like, I never even, you know, now sit here as like a guru going, do as I say. Like, I'm nowhere near where I want to be in my career, but I just like being the bridge between the community and other people who have, you know, been there and done that, or the people who are doing great things right now. And I learn on every session, you know, that I host just as much as the audience do. But like, I'm seeing a lot of people who are promising actors success that they've never had themselves. And I'm like, you don't have to be something that you're not. Like, just, you know, I think your audience resonates miles better with you when you're just really honest. You know, I'd never sit there going, I know it all, because I really have no idea. You know, I screw stuff up all the time. I make mistakes every day. You know, I'd done some self-tapes recently that, you know, looking back, I was like, God, you know what? Like, no, that just wasn't, that wasn't good enough. Like, you know, I had a chat with Andy Morgan, the casting director, on a session for Acts on This a couple of weeks ago. And there was a bit of a revelation there. He was talking about actors, and one thing that so few have been doing recently on self-tapes have been really thinking about backstory and, you know, so, well, yeah, backstory of the for the character if when it's not in the script. So he was giving an example of a procedural role that people were auditioning for as a policeman. And he was saying a lot of people just delivered the piece because, you know, it's just a procedural role. It's not like, you know, there's not loads of substance to it. They just delivered it quite clinically. And it was just, you know, here's some information. But it was a policeman who was dealing with a paedophile. Just to make things dark again on the podcast.
That's okay.
But he asked every actor who was being seen for that role, does this policeman have kids? And not a single one of them could answer that question because no one had thought enough about the backstory because they didn't think that policeman's role meant enough, was important enough. And yet, you know, if you are dealing with a potential paedophile, if you have children, I'm sure your response to that is going to be slightly different to someone who doesn't have the experience of being a parent. So that's going to bleed into the performance. You know, if you put yourself in that position and think, God, if this guy had been, you know, hurting my children, how would I feel? That's gonna be very different. And that was a real realization for me because I thought, God, in this tape that I just did for Amy Hubbard, for a really great show, I didn't think of that. I didn't think, you know, it was only 2 scenes as a copper and it was quite procedural, but there was definitely depth to that character that I could have put in there had I thought more forensically about that. So I, you know, I'm learning all the time. I don't get it right all the time at all. So yeah, for me, I'm just like, you know, all about being on the journey with everybody else, I guess, as opposed to sitting there going, just because I run this community, I know it all, because I really don't, you know.
No, and I think
Ross, yeah, it's
yeah.
interesting that you brought that up, and Den and I were smiling at each other because on the last episode we were doing talking about auditioning, and
Oh, okay.
that exact point came up about, you know, it was more tailored towards when you have like a one or two liner or just like a very short self-tape to do, and how it can be awkward and how to enrich it more to put that
Exactly.
backstory into it. So I'm really glad that you brought that up. But yeah, that's
Yeah,
it
no,
makes
honestly, I
so
just
much sense once you
yeah.
hear it, you know?
And I yeah, honestly, like, and you just think, God, how have I neglected that? Like, you know, I've been doing this for so long, and yet still, you know, if you're not sort of I don't know, just constantly thinking, you know, of ways to, you know, to be better and just deliver, you know, a better performance when you are doing those tapes where you have five lines, six lines, even just a couple of lines. You know, it's not about stealing the show and doing, you know, making a bold choice and doing something crazy. You know, I'm not gonna add in any contemporary dance into that scene, but it's just, you know, what else could be going on in the back of that character's mind that might just make it a bit more interesting, as opposed to just going, you know, just being very, you know, very procedural and just, you know, not really. I think it's remembering that before that person's a policeman, he's a human being.
We were always one and the same. Can we know? A love that's still buried in me. 'Cause I'm gonna get you on my side. You know that I'm gonna leave the rest behind. Could it be this time? Could it be this time?
I don't know how you do it, Sajin, honestly. Like, what's sort of like, I don't know, what's it like every day for you as a looking after all us lot who are just completely unstable and just mental?
Well, I not only rep actors, but I also rep models. So I have a different company that represents models. So I have double the clients.
Who's harder to deal with, the actors or the models?
That's a great question. I think the actors, because they've got a little bit,
Damn
no,
it.
they've got a little bit more that they have to do. Like, more effort has to be put in. You have to be like, as a model, you don't really have to audition and things like that, like put that much effort in necessarily.
I think that's harder though, because it's kind of like, at least as actors, I feel like I have more control because I do have to perform, or you know, I can sort of I can. I don't know. I can control that situation a bit more in terms of the work that I put in and the preparation and all that sort of stuff. I think as a model, oh, I don't know. It must be like, if you don't book a job, it's like, oh, you just hated the look of me then. I don't know. It's like, it seems a bit more brutal.
I see how it looks that way. But at the same time, like with modeling, it's a lot more behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So you don't really know as much how many times you've been put out for something or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas acting, you know, when you do your audition that's going out and you're being considered.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And I was also going to say, if it was an actor like either of you who is super organized and knows what they're doing, I mean, that's a breeze. It's a dream. But it's like really like 2% of the actors.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's nice to keep
Actually,
ahead of the curve, I guess. Yes.
yeah. I think this would be a good segue for a question I had for you, Ross.
Yeah.
Obviously, like we follow ACT on this, and I see all the great tips that you have. And I don't know if this is just like this generation problem or UK actors versus Canadian actors, but I feel like a lot of the people that I have on now feel like, okay, I have an agent, I've done my headshots, I've done a couple contrasting scenes to put up on my, you know, profiles, and now I'm done and I'm just waiting for everything to kind of happen. Yep. Sometimes it's, I've got an agent in my headshots, and now I'm just waiting for the magic to happen. So I see so much like that you put on like all those things that you should be doing every day or every week as an actor. So I'd say like, what are your biggest tips of like what to do behind the scenes as an actor to try and make things happen for yourself a little bit more?
I think, yeah. I mean, well for me, I've just never, and it is probably just a bit of a control issue that I have in my life where I have to be in control of everything. I've never, and I could never feel comfortable sitting there expecting my agent to do it all for me. And there might be some agents out there who actually go, well, I want clients who do just want me to do it all for them because maybe they want that control. That's just the way that I work. I couldn't have that. I think Jane, my agent, love it a bit. She's fantastic. But I only pay Jane 15%. I think it's 15. Jane, what do I pay you? I think 15. let's say most actors pay up to, in the UK, depending on the work, up to 20%, say. So for me, I'm like, right, in my head, I should be doing 80, 85% of the work because Jane's only going to get her 15% and she's got all these other clients to look after. And also just for my own well-being, you know, my own sense of like, just like being in control and a bit more progress. I feel that there are things that I can do every day that over time, they're not massive things, but over time will compound into big results. So people think in their life that it's often the big decisions that they make that make the difference in their career, like their agent, who they go with, and the drama school that they train at. You know, these are big decisions, like where do I go here? Who do I sign with? All this sort of stuff. And yet science says, you know, when you look at performance, high performance, and you look at achievement and things like that, that actually it isn't the big decisions in your life that move the needle on it. It's the seemingly insignificant decisions that you make every day, such as, say, you wanted to work on your body composition and you wanted to get in better shape. You having a burger for your dinner today won't really affect tomorrow. If you had a burger tomorrow, it's probably, you know, not really going to, you know, change your body composition over the next few days, you know, that kind of thing. But that seemingly insignificant decision of what to eat for your dinner, over 60 days, 90 days, you have a burger every day for 90 days, it's going to have a big impact. So as an actor, you know, sending one email a day, if I send an email today, I've done emails already today to various casting directors on a Saturday because I'm dedicated. They might not even like that because they're like, Ross Dickhead, what are you doing? Why are you emailing me on a Saturday, you knob? They might not like that. But I'm like, right, you know what? I've got a bit of time. I'm doing it, okay?
Yeah.
So that, you know, that might not have an impact. I might not get a reply tomorrow. I might not get a reply on Monday, you know. But if I do this every single day, just one piece of outreach, whether that's on social media, whether that's via email, it could be, you know, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, wherever, then actually that seemingly insignificant decision sows 30 seeds a month out there that could sprout at any one time. So in 6 weeks' time, maybe something I've sent today has been filed away. Someone searches in their inbox for Manchester actors. I pop up and I get an opportunity from it. So for me, it's just about, yeah, being proactive and taking full accountability and full responsibility for where I'm at. Because I believe if I'm pointing my fingers at everyone else in the industry, my agent, oh, this, I'm not getting an audition because this casting director doesn't like me, or they'll never see me, or they only see people they know, I'm giving all my power away. I'm feeling helpless. I'm always arguing for my own limitations and the industry's limitations, as opposed to going, well, actually, you know what? I'm going to point those fingers at me, or make, turn the fingers into thumbs and point them back at myself, and go, you know what, Ross, if you're not working, it's your fault. And I mean it in an empowering way. It's not a negative thing going, Ross, you're shit, you're not working because you're crap. It's not, oh, can we swear on this, by the way? Sorry, I just keep
doing
that.
Yeah, of course you can.
You can.
You've had far worse, don't worry.
No problem. I'm just getting FaceTime by my mum here as well.
That's fine.
Let's just I'll decline that call. Hopefully she's not there going, Ross, sorry, I need your help. Hopefully she's fine. She'd probably just want me to just do a bit of shopping or something. But she wants me to order some stuff on Amazon. She's not very technical. I'm like, look, if I'm, you know, giving all of that power away by saying it's your fault or their fault that I'm not working, then again, I'm losing that control, as opposed to going, no, it's my fault, Ross. If you're not working, it's your fault. So that gives me all of the power back, because if it's my fault, I can do something about it. And, you know, Andy Morgan, great casting director I had on, I'd say, last week. And he said, you know, his exact words were, any casting director who doesn't expect to receive unsolicited, you know, email. And this is UK based. It might be different in Canada. It's certainly different in the US market. Casting directors don't really like a lot of unsolicited approaches, but in the UK, it's cool. He said, if they don't expect to have unsolicited, you know, emails from actors, And he actually just flicked the V's at the camera and went, you know, they can F off, because they should expect that. And he said, as casting directors, we are only as good as the actors that we know. And I just say to every actor, you know, who doesn't know you right now? Which casting directors in this industry do not know you exist? And I think for most actors, it's probably 80 to 90% of casting directors, because fear of judgment, of other people's opinions, just cripples them and stops them from actually taking those insignificant decisions every day and sending that email, writing that tweet, posting that scene, whatever it would be, editing the showreel, getting new headshots, whatever it would be. They're just so, like, just petrified of other people's opinions, that they just don't take the action that's congruent with the result that they want, because they don't truly believe they have the potential, I think, in a lot of cases, to get what they want. They like to say they're an actor in the bio of Twitter, because anyone can do that. I can put I'm an actor, professional actor, in my IG bio because it makes me feel good. Oh, okay, yeah. But actually, am I? Are you?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm hearing a lot of people going, oh, well, you know, as long as you're acting on anything, you're an actor. And I'm like, to a certain extent, yes, that's true. But like, it's not really fulfilling if your acting career is only ever at the point where it's a hobby. The most fulfilling, I think, is when you really feel you're making progress and you are booking, even if you are booking as one-line roles on TV. It's amazing the first TV job you get. And it's a big jump up from doing student films to actually being on a set for the first time, having a trailer with your name on it and getting picked up, and you feel a bit special. Like, oh my God, I'm getting a driver to pick me up. I've only got one line. What must it be like if I get a leading role, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a big difference. It's massive. And that, you know, and that validates you to a certain extent. I remember thinking, God, no, now I really can say to people I'm an actor, because, you know, I'm on a TV show that millions of people are going to watch, and it's a lovely feeling, and it makes you feel like you have even more potential next time, so you take even more action, you get a better result, and hopefully on and on and on it goes. But it's having that belief in the first instance and taking that action on the daily that isn't just like you say, you know, saying I've got an agent, I've got my headshots, I've got a couple of contrasting scenes, now it's all going to happen, because it's not. Because there's thousands of other actors in that position as well. If you want something other people don't have, you've got to do something other people aren't doing. And that's not actually 100%. Always that much more, because there's not many people doing that much in my experience. They're all just waiting for it to happen.
Totally. Out of curiosity, like, because obviously how busy you are, and like obviously the fact that you do have so much going on with Act On This, and like literally I feel like there's, well, I've got different names for them, but I feel like it's like Casual Chat Monday on Facebook sometimes, like a, you know, an Instagram live story, and then you've got like the rapid fire once a month,
rapid fire Fridays every other week. Yes.
Every other week. So it's you know, do you ever find that all, everything that you're doing and all the emails and all the social media and all that kind of stuff, do you find that sometimes it can maybe get in the way of actually what you want to do as an actor, like as if with auditions and stuff? Does it ever kind of impact the other side in a way or not?
It's a difficult one. I mean, I think it probably, do you know what it does impact? One thing that it has slowed down, definitely, to be completely honest with you, is the goal that the probably like one of my biggest life goals, and it is pretty big, because when you look at like who I'm going to mention now, you're like, God, right, you've got a way to go. But if I could write something and direct it and star in it comedy wise like Ricky Gervais does with Afterlife, I mean, my life would be made. I mean, just to even be in Afterlife, I'm like, I'd probably be able to retire just after that, to be honest. But that for me is absolutely like the ultimate dream. And I've, over the years, have sat down and written multiple sitcoms and stuff like that. Some have got further in the like commissioning process than others. You know, nothing's really been taken to pilot or anything. But I'm working on one now, which I think has more legs than probably anything I've ever written before. And because Act On This has really blown up in the last year since the pandemic, you know, since lockdown, I think it's been, you know, a much bigger part of actors' sort of weeks over here, because they've had no acting classes to go to, or, you know, they've not, you know, this is kind of like their link to the industry in a way, you know, speaking to these guests that we have on every week. It's almost that amount of work and that amount of like admin that I've got to do, and, you know, booking all the guests, and then it's like a treadmill. You know, you book the guest, you schedule them in, you do, I have to do like a trailer like test with them. So I record a trailer, we start promoting that, you know, then I host the event, and then we edit it the whole of the next day. We make a lot of micro content from it, and then it begins again for the next week. It is a bit of a treadmill of content, and I've brought on other team members now who do quite a bit of that work for me. Again, I'm a control freak, and I should probably like let a bit more of it go. but it has impacted on the amount of time I have been able to spend on this script, which really actually, when I take a bird's eye view, is and should be my main priority right now. Because that's something, that seemingly insignificant decision to write a page of script today, actually over 30 days is an episode. And I'm like, Ross, why aren't you doing that? And it's like, oh, because I'm distracted by other stuff. So yeah, to be, you know, just to be completely open, yes, it definitely encroaches on that. In terms of my own career, I guess that's an interesting one, because maybe it does take time away from, I don't know if it takes time away from me finding my own opportunities, because right now loads of opportunities are presenting themselves, but that's probably just the compound effects of the last 10 years. Yeah. So actually, maybe back in the day, I was putting loads of time in this when no one knew me, but actually having met so many casting directors and become friends with them over the last decade, now it's kind of paying off. You know, I'm invited to an awful lot of read-throughs for, you know, big dramas where I get to meet people. Opportunities come up from that. Sometimes I'm given roles. You know, I got the part in Years and Years from Russell because I helped them out at the read-through for Years and Years. I read in for all of the male people who couldn't be there. And there was a character, Billy, that I ended up playing that was in two episodes. And I just read that. And then, you know, I was a little bit cheeky and I got a few other cast members like Lydia West to go... Does anyone know if anyone's playing Billy yet? Because like, seems a bit up my street. That's like basically, I could definitely do that. And then I got a phone call from my agent saying Andy Pryor, the casting director, has just been on the phone and they want to straight offer you Billy. So, you know, that came from, you know, from sort of having my audition in the read through. You know, and I've been doing a lot of that recently. I host read throughs on Zoom. So I did one recently for a drama called Help with Stephen Graham and Jodie Comer. I did one last week for something called The Responder with Martin Freeman. Great all-star cast again. I'm not in it, but I kind of host the read through. I do all of the stage directions and just make sure that it's kind of, it just kind of, you know, works. So that's a real privilege to be able to do that. So I make contacts there. I've not got any parts in that, but you never know, stuff kind of comes up. And then I've got one next week for something called Traces for BBC that Martin Comston, Molly Windsor star in. And you know, it's kind of like that only kind of comes about from making connections over a decade. There is no person to apply to go, hi, can I do read-throughs? That isn't a job, you know, it's not a job application. You get that through just knowing people in the industry and being reliable and, you know, and helping out. So for me, yeah, maybe Acts on This has taken, you know, time up where I could have done stuff in the past, but now I feel a lot of that has come to fruition where, you know, I'm getting a lot of opportunities just because of the work that's accumulated over, you know, over the years. I mean, you don't know the alternative, do you though? I mean, I have no idea. I can't go back and say what would have happened if I didn't do Acts on This for a decade. You know, I've no idea, to be honest.
No, but also I think actually just you being out there doing Act on This has probably given you far more opportunity just because people can hear your voice, they can see you, you know, they just kind of get to know you, they kind of get your vibe, they know what you're about. So it's not like it's not that you're just like a shot in the dark that they don't know and they might see like now and again for an audition. Like you are you. So they're like, oh yeah, we can trust Ross. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think on the flip side as well, maybe because a lot of my role on Acts on This is a presenter as opposed to an actor. I think maybe it's had that effect where some people just see me as, you know, oh, he's just this cheesy guy. He just kind of is a bit more of a presenter style thing. So there's certain roles they might not let me have a crack at, because they see me as this guy who's really happy, smiley, come on everybody, come and get involved in Acts on This. So I think, but that's, again, I take responsibility for that. So for me to get myself out of that box, you know, I've recently been starting to kind of shoot showreel scenes and stuff. Chris Stone's a great friend of mine. We often go out and muck around with his camera. He's a really great showreel producer in this country. And we'll go and test things out and setups for him. And, you know, we'll record stuff that, it sort of shows different sides. I mean, you know, a more sort of emotional side. We did last time where we did like this breakup scene where, you know, got to have a little bit of a breakdown. And most people don't see that side. I mean, they just see the sort of like the, you know, the happy-go-lucky kind of guy. So
fascinating.
I think sometimes when, again, it's just, you know, taking responsibility and going, if the industry's only seeing me as one thing, then it's up to me to prove that I can do other stuff. Like, I don't feel that, you know, so many actors almost feels a little bit like they're entitled to me. It's almost like, oh, no one's seeing me. Well, do you just expect that they should? Like, you know, what are you doing to actually, you know, if they're not going to see you, you need to show yourself to them. I just love being involved in the industry at all, you know, in any capacity. And you know, I guess you can't, there's no formula to just, you know, absolutely guarantee work. But I just think, you know, if you've got, I'd rather have 75 plates spinning in the air, and then I'd rather, you know, drop 40 of them, because I've still got 35 spinning, where I think a lot of actors like panic if they've got more than two in the air at once. It's like, well, you know, if you drop one, half of your opportunity's gone. Like, just let's just, you know, thrive on loads of stuff, you know, loads of projects out there, and just see what happens. You know,
no, I love it. I'm also just very much into your accent. It's a great accent. It's like a brilliant accent to listen to. Sorry, I was just like,
oh right,
I do. I'm massively into accents. So, and I wish I could do the accent. Sorry, I was also listening to you, but I was very much like, we've just got to mention this great accent, because at least over half of our listens are in Canada. So I imagine everyone's gonna be like, whoa, listen to.
Oh, I don't even,
like,
see, isn't that weird? I mean, I do a load of voiceover, but I don't even think what my own accent is. It's like, we just, you know, it's just, I don't know, what is it?
I've been from down south. I can't really, you know.
General Northern.
It's Manchester, isn't it? Yeah. It's General Northern, isn't it?
General Northern. There you go. I'll take that.
General Northern, yeah. Because I lived in Canada, that's why I think I didn't realise I had an accent until I lived in another country.
I freaking love Canada, by the way. I've only been to Canada. Yay. I went to Canada for 24 hours. I went to Toronto for 1 day. Wow. I got down to the last two for a role on a show out there called, it's filmed in Toronto, called In the Dark on the CW. And it was like me and one other guy, and we got flown out and got down to literally, like, you know, screen test style stuff. And I didn't get it, but I got to spend 24 hours in Canada, in Toronto. I got to walk around. I visited the Apple store because my AirPods that I bought in the UK broke. And I thought, I wonder if Apple will replace them in Canada. I thought, no, probably not. Went in, boom, shout out to Apple. Doesn't matter where you go in the world, they will replace your AirPods, even if you bought them in the UK and you go to Canada. But yeah, honestly, loved it. I mean, saw a day of it, but I just, you know, yeah, absolutely love a bit of Toronto. So I'll go back anytime if the CW are listening and you want to see me again, I'm available.
Take you on. Yeah. Well, it's funny because I think every part of Canada, so like I've only done a flyby trip to Toronto myself, but I lived in the East Coast and then also the West Coast. So I was in the East Coast in Halifax, Nova Scotia for 5 years and then 3 years in Vancouver, BC. And they're all very different. Those kind of areas like are very, very different. I mean, Sneji, you probably traveled more of Canada than I obviously have. I just did coast to coast. I just stuck by the water. Yeah. I like water.
And it seems like a thriving TV industry, though, in Canada. And it's easier for us as Brits to work because of the Commonwealth, I guess, and visas. You know, to get an O-1 for LA is, like, almost impossible. But I think to get a visa to work in Canada, they just go, yeah, 25 quid and we'll do it in 2 weeks. You know, I don't know what the actual price
like
is.
Yeah.
It seems pretty straightforward from what I read about it, but maybe it's a little bit more complex. But, yeah, no, there seems to be loads going on.
It's mainly Vancouver, isn't it, Sneji? Like,
Vancouver's getting busier and busier, so they're building so many more studios here just to accommodate.
Yeah,
and I think it's that tax break as well, isn't it? Because like they've got to have a certain amount of locals.
Right,
it's like a certain amount of locals.
Local hires.
How many? Do you know how many shows are filming at the moment, Sneji, over in Vancouver? I don't know why I went so high.
No, but I don't. It's kind of also somewhat of a pilot season happening right now, so there's probably a lot more going on. But yeah, no, there's loads. And they also film, like, I think 60 Hallmark Christmas movies here a year or something. Horrifying.
Love
like
a good
that.
Hallmark Christmas movie.
The names are just amazing.
Honestly.
When it snows.
They are brilliant. I love it.
To be fair, it is also the voiceover hub of the world. Like it's insane. When I was in Vancouver, that's how I got a lot more into voiceover, because obviously I know you do voice as well. It's like, it's insane. They do so much animation there. It's kind of like, it's actually sickening sometimes for me to think, why am I not still over in Vancouver for animation? Damn it.
I love it.
Yeah. Do you do much animation? Because I know I've heard a lot of your commercial stuff.
I got into animation doing a Netflix show, something called Wakfu. It's like an anime, and it's, I play a guy called Sir Percival of Sadly Grove. He's an absolute geek. He's a gingerhead like knight who like gets, he's just really unlucky in luck. It's basically just based on my it could be my true life story. Terrible with the women, gets into fights all the time. He dies at the end of season one, and I thought, oh my God,
spoiler.
Like, I thought, oh, it's going to be over. Got the scripts for season two, resurrected, boom. Got like 78 episodes. I think we ended up doing about 126 episodes. That's called Wakfu. And then I do now a show called Abby Hatcher on Nickelodeon. And I just did probably about 18 months ago. I just wish they would make more of this. It was supposed to be like a new flagship show for the BBC for kids, 2 to 6 year olds on CBeebies called Tinpo. There's four people in it, four characters: Tinpo, Hakpo, Dugpo, and Logipo. Po just means person in children's world,
right.
So it's like, you know,
okay.
They just like
walk around.
I'm just
thinking of Teletubbies, just a bunch of different.
It's a bit like that, but it's animated, beautiful 3D animation though, and they go around like saving the day, and then like, you know, Timpo's got his iPad, and he'll like solve problems and help kids, you know, get like build like construction stuff over mountains to get to the fairground, and you know, it sort of like teaches kids logical problem solving and stuff like that. But yeah, I'm Tinpo. A woman called Lizzie Waterworth Santo, she's the voice of Horrid Henry. She's in it as well. A guy called Keith Wickham, who is the Fat Controller, or Sir Topham Hatt, I think he's called in the States in Thomas the Tank. Joe Ruiz is another far more experienced voiceover actor than I am. But yeah, we got to do that show. We did 78 episodes of that.
Blimey.
It's out, but I'm like, where's all the promo for it? Like CBeebies, you know, I need a third season. So if you could sort of do better, get more kids watching
it. Push it out there, guys. Come on.
Yeah, come on. What's going on? So I do quite a lot of animation. It's brilliant because you don't have to learn any lines. You don't have to walk and talk. No. You get to literally sit with your script in one hand, a cup of coffee in the other, and just like have a lovely time. It's honestly one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah,
I love it.
It's awesome. It's like the best kept secret, isn't it? That's the thing. It's like, just, you know, you almost just like, well, am I really getting paid for this? I'm just chilling out. I don't even have to do any like preamble. I just be like, awesome.
Well, now as well, like with lockdown, I was forced to go, right, well, I'm gonna have to start working from home and need to set up a little studio at home. Nowhere near as pro looking as what you've got there, Jen, but I turned my IKEA corner wardrobe into a booth that I literally just sort of like step into. I use a, you know, pretty cheap 150 quid USB mic by a company called Rode Microphones. Huge shout out to them because they're just incredible. Peter Friedman, the guy who owns that company, he's just been so kind to me over the years, just gives me lots of kit. Yeah, I thought, oh my God, like with this piece of software called Source Connect, I can now connect to any studio in the world, literally just roll out of bed, do voiceovers from my bedroom. It sounds really good. I don't need to travel anywhere. It's just like, it's just been like a dream over the last, you know, sort of like year or so to go, God, I can still do as much voiceover as I used to do, but now even easier. I don't need to get on a train and go into Manchester. I just get to, you know, open my wardrobe, and it's a good job people can't see. It's a good job people can't see how bad it looks, because some engineers go, what's your setup like there, Ross? It sounds really good. And I'm like, to be honest with you, mate, I'm just still in an IKEA wardrobe and I've got 150 quid USB microphone. Like, it shouldn't sound as good as it does.
Nice.
But yeah, IKEA should go into voice booths, because for 149 quid or whatever it cost me, it's an absolute bargain.
I mean, to be fair, this is also a cupboard. It's an extended cupboard as well. Like, I was initially, I was in this space where there was a light and I could only move my face, because if I moved anything else, I would just destroy everything. But my husband kind of extended it further out. So now I'm just like, oh, I can move, I can do everything. And it's, you know, but it is a nice space. But yeah, I think any... Yeah,
Looks very
better.
Pro because I mean mine.
It looks I don't
have any of the foam. Have you got foam there? I literally am just surrounded by clothes. I just put some more jumpers up. You know, just go there. Nice. You go. That'll absorb some of the reflections. That's fine.
Yeah. See, I tried the whole acoustic blanket for a long time, but I just got too hot. I think I've said this so many times. I just was panting, and it's just not a good sound.
It's not a good
for
sound.
Any kind of voiceover. It's just like, you know, it's like this is Jennifer Bradley. It's like, no, we can't have that. So at least I can sort of pant further away if I get too hot in here, and then it's not too bad.
Sounds good.
But yeah, sounds decent. I don't know about you, Sneji, but I think maybe random question time. What do you reckon?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
let's go.
Go first.
Let's go. Yeah, you go first, Sneji. Go on.
Okay. Would you rather give up your smartphone or your computer?
Oh my god. Oh, I'm sure I'm going to have to weigh this up. Is this supposed to be like quick fire? I would.
No, it's not. You don't. You can actually take your time.
Two.
It's fine.
You can
yeah,
take
it's
your
only
time.
Have two. It's fine.
Because, wow. Okay. I'm just trying to think if I could still run oh, my God. Because obviously I run my entire business off a computer, but I also run my life off. God. Do you know what? I don't know. I'd have to give up my smartphone, I think, because I could still FaceTime and stuff from my computer, but then I'd have to carry it around with me somehow.
Yeah, that'd be hilarious, just walking along.
It's an impossible question, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Jen thought it would stump you.
Oh, but see, if I got rid of a smartphone, I don't know if you can get Tinder on your iMac. I'm trying to find a why. I'd struggle. Oh god.
Well, I guess there's always plenty of fish.
Does that even still exist?
I have no idea.
We should do a dating section. I'm using Hinge at the moment. That seems to be a better quality dating app than Tinder's.
I've heard
a bit of that one. Tinder's a bit rough. Bumble's a bit better. Hinge is probably the best one, but still haven't found a wife yet.
It's hard. And I think as well with lockdowns as well. I mean, that's just chaos of disaster. It's just like you can't even go near another person, let alone
I'm not dating. Like, no way. Absolutely not. Don't give me any deadly disease, you know. Diseases that I mean, there's too much disease on Tinder. But yeah, we don't want any of that. No, we're gonna wait till it's much safer again. So yeah, I'd have to try and get Hinge on my iMac if I got rid of my phone. I just don't know. I'd have to walk down the street with my iMac like on my shoulder with a
like a boombox, but instead just anyway.
Impossible question that. Yeah,
that is an impossible question. Yeah, we did actually think these ones ahead, and yeah, we thought that one would probably stump you. To be fair,
definitely.
So, yeah.
What other random questions have we got? This is great.
Oh well, no, there's another one coming. But Sneji, we ask all of us, what would you do? Yeah, so that's
very
a hard
diplomatic.
One. Go on, Sneji.
Well, luckily, I can do almost everything from my phone, even submit auditions and send stuff and everything. So I'd probably give up my computer.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
It would be really annoying to do everything from my phone.
It takes so much longer, doesn't it? Even to write an email. I'm like, oh, God, I just had a keyboard.
But probably my computer, I guess. Ooh.
Oh, I know. It's just,
too many people contact me on the phone, so I would need the phone.
What are you going for then, Jem?
I think I'm going to have to side with Ross here. I think I'd have to get rid of my phone because I kind of have a love-hate relationship with my phone anyway. Like, I kind of hate the fact that it's in my life, but at the same time, I know I need it. But if I had to choose, it would go because, well, you know, at least my laptop, I can send emails comfortably because there's a keyboard. And I can also, you know, record voice into it through a microphone and do all the editing and stuff like that. I can't do that with my phone. So the phone would have to go. It would be joyous.
And then, but then if we all helped each other out, you could be our phone, and then we just you know do any. We could type emails for you, no problem. We'd have computers.
Yeah, perfect.
Solved.
Smart. Yeah, the three of us just working together. It'll be fine.
And you could do all the swiping for me on all these apps. So you could go right.
Oh,
you could,
I love doing that anyway.
You could do that on my behalf and just go, Ross, I've got your great date with this girl here. She's amazing. You know, probably going to be your wife, but she's in Vancouver.
Career idea. Find women.
Yes.
That'd be
so much fun.
Honestly.
Yes.
Great.
Oh my God. No, that'd be so much fun.
A relationship agent.
Yes. Relationship agent. Done. I'll do it.
Easy.
I'm just super into it.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. And also sometimes you just need a bit of fresh perspective when because sometimes someone else can maybe choose a better person for you. Potentially, who knows?
The struggle.
That's hard. My one is so would you rather have invisibility or flight?
Oh,
I know.
Both absolute stunning superpowers. I'd go for invisibility because if I wanted to fly somewhere, I could just get on the plane without anyone seeing. So, yeah, I'd love to know what it would be like to fly. But invisibility, I think, you know, I could just go shopping when the shops are closed. You know, I could, like, just go and just spy on people, you know, just, like, go into, as an actor, you could sneak into production meetings and find out what was going on before it actually happened.
Yes.
And you know, you could go and put your CV on the top of the pile in the middle of the night when on a casting note it says desk, and they're like, "Oh, we're seeing Ross today. How are you?" Yeah,
yeah, that's a great idea. So, would you have the choice to then be invisible and then become uninvisible?
Oh yeah, you'd have to be able to come back. You'd have to be visible again. Yeah. Is that allowed? You could go invisible when it's convenient.
I'm going
to
say it's allowed.
I'm going to say it.
Although I feel like it ties in quite nicely. You know, when you were saying about how much you really enjoyed that show, I think he would have done very well had he had invisibility on his side too. To be fair,
without a doubt.
Like, yeah,
that might be coming in season three.
Hopefully, who knows. Yep. Who knows? We heard it here first. Sneji?
Flight. You know I want to fly.
There you go. That was the easy.
But only because, I mean, I'm looking out of my balcony at these beautiful mountains, and I'm just like, how nice would it be just to, like, blue, and just go on one of the mountaintops and just chill out and watch the sunset or whatever.
That would be
alone.
Cool.
Yeah,
fair enough. I think that's the major benefit of Vancouver. Have you ever been to Vancouver, Ross?
No. I should go though after lockdown.
Just mountains and ocean and forest,
beaches and forest.
Beaches,
it's
I love it. I'm going.
Stunning. Yeah, you should. It's incredible. I'm massively a fan. I don't know, because I would want both as well, to be honest. I don't know. I think I'm going to have to side with you again, Ross. I think visibility would be great just because I it's that element of control. I like to know what's going on when I'm also not around.
He made some good points for invisibility.
You did. You fully sold the invisibility thing for me.
Well, I think the only thing for me is if I was flying and I wasn't invisible, then I think the government would probably try and shoot us down. I think it could be quite dangerous. I think it could be quite dangerous being visible and flying as a human being. I don't think, you know, you could get away with it for too long before people went, wait a minute. What's going on?
Yeah. And if you were flying, Snesh, would you wear please tell me you'd wear like some kind of cool suit. Yes, like a cape.
100%. What do you think I am? Of course I would.
You're like, what kind of crazy woman are you?
You've got to have a cape if you're going to fly, I'm afraid. Yeah, definitely.
Hello.
Yeah, you do. I'm trying to think what else because I'm probably just
I just feel like
out.
I could talk to you forever. I have so many things.
Yeah, I know. You're such an enjoyable person to talk to.
Yeah, honestly. Thank you so much for coming on and imparting your wisdom.
It's a pleasure. I love it. I could talk just forever and ever and ever about it. Well, I do. I mean, literally, that's what I do. People go, oh, but you know, you put all this content out, you do all this sort of stuff. And like, yeah, it is kind of work in a way, but it's just really enjoyable. So it's like, you know, I just enjoy putting it out there, basically chatting to people. And yeah, it's a real pleasure to not be the host, you know, to just go, right, and come and answer some questions.
Have you found it kind of like different to be on the other side of it? Does it feel much different for you?
What I love doing about stuff like this is it was quite interesting, you know, when, like, I think you said in the email, and people always say this if ever I do something, like, oh, is there anything you don't want to talk about or anything like that? And I'm like, no, like, I'm so confident in terms of, like, just the industry and what I know and my experiences, and being vulnerable and sharing what I don't know as equally as what I do know and stuff. And I think there's something nice about that, where you rock up to something like this and just go, no, let's just chew the fat and talk about anything at all. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not happened very often. There's been a couple of guests, you know, that I've interviewed over, like, many years ago. It's not happened for years, but where they have been a bit almost like, they haven't wanted to talk about certain things, not because there's anything weird going on or dodgy, or it's like a scandalous topic or something like that. I think that too many people, and it made me realize that it's not just actors, but casting directors, directors, writers, producers, every single person in our industry is just as fearful of people's opinions of them within this industry as everybody else. It's not just actors who are afraid of taking action on certain things for a fear of what other people will think of them. It really is everybody, and actors need to realize that. Like, they shouldn't be afraid of casting directors or people of perceived, you know, influence, because they're just as scared as we are in terms of, you know, sometimes where their next job is coming from, etc., etc. And I think, you know, there have been people like who you might get this, where they've been a guest on the podcast and they've said something, and then you'll get the email the next day where they go, oh, that thing I said about such and such a thing, should I have said that? Do you think I should edit that out? And I'm like, no, it was brilliant. It was you being authentically you. Like, you know, why are you afraid of what someone might think of your opinion, which is valid, as long as you're not being, like, you know, anything crazy, like overtly racist or, you know, just sexist or whatever, you know, something that's just wrong. You can have an opinion on something in this industry, you know, and you should be okay with having an opinion. It's a really subjective industry to be in, as is art and anything creative. Some stuff people are afraid to go, that show, I didn't really like it, just because some executive producer is like, oh, I loved it. They think they have to go, oh, I thought that was absolutely amazing as well, even though they didn't. I'm like, no, if you don't like something, just say you don't like it. It's fine. You know, I'm not a massive Shakespeare fan. People will be like, oh, well, you're not a real actor then, are you? I have no desire to do Shakespeare ever in my life. I've done it. I didn't understand it then. I don't understand it now. I don't think it should be so precious and sacrilegious to say you don't like it or anything like that. It's not for me. You know, it's absolutely not for me. Theatre, in a way, I don't really enjoy doing. It's TV. I love doing it. I love doing stuff with technology and cameras and lenses and music and that sort of stuff. And it's just about, you know, so I love coming on this kind of stuff and just going, look, I'm just going to be authentically me and not worry about what other people think. And that's what I've learned over the last decade of doing this, is just how much my guests sometimes are crippled by that, because they are so afraid of someone. I don't know, we have this weird cancel culture now, don't we, where it's like, someone make a mistake. I mean, what do you guys think about that? Because I'm like, I think sometimes it's,
can't do anything,
it's,
can't say
really
anything,
unfair, isn't it? Because I'm like, we're human. I am going to make a mistake at some point. And anybody who sits there in their ivory tower that they've never made a mistake, I'm like, well, you're not a human being, have you? You've never done anything in your life if you've never made a mistake. I don't believe people should be cancelled in this industry for, you know, if they make a mistake 2, 3, 4 times on the trot and it's the same mistake, you can go, oh, actually, there probably is something inherently wrong with you, or you do have, like, really weird ideological, like, views on stuff that are just incompatible with society today. But on a whole, you know, somebody just slips up and makes a mistake, like, please, let's not jump to judging people so harshly and go, that's it, take the show off them, cancel them. I think there's a thing where sometimes frustrated people in life love seeing the downfall of people who they think have been more successful than them. And I don't like that. I'm like, there's so much success available in this industry for everybody. Like, go and get your bit of it. Again, make those seemingly insignificant decisions every day. They will compound into great things down the line. Just focus on what you're doing, not on what everyone else is doing.
I know. I think this cancel culture is very much close to what's threatening freedom of speech, and it's quite scary because I think people say things that they potentially don't mean all the time. I mean, God, the amount of things that I've been very close to removing on this podcast many times, where I'm like, oh wait, should I have said this? Like, but it's like, yeah, but it's just my turn of phrase. I'm not being overtly whatever or whatever, but it is quite scary. It's quite scary that people are so ready to be like, oh nope, I don't like that. That's got to go.
Well, they're just looking for it now. People are just kind of looking for where they can catch you out, and that's really freaky.
And it's like fast forward to actor and agent being cancelled.
We're cancelling this episode now, definitely. But I've kind of noticed that, and that's where I just try and I enjoy doing this where I'm not the host, where I don't have to think too much about the questions and kind of like, you know, think, oh, if I say that, will people think that? I'm just like, look, let's come and have a chat. You know, and talk about serial killers and being invisible, you know.
Why would you want to talk about anything else?
Bit of a different podcast than normal, but I enjoy it. So what's kind of like the plan for you guys, like moving this forward and stuff, in terms of like, is there anything that you're struggling with? Just because I'm just thinking back to when I was first starting out doing stuff, I'm just really interested in terms of like, I don't know what you're finding with every episode of this and how you guys are learning, or is there anything that you're coming across that you're like, oh, you know, you're getting stuck on anything, or any breakthroughs you've had where you've overcome something in the podcasting process? I think every actor should have a podcast, you see.
I think so too, to be honest. There's a lot. What is there anything that you're finding, Snesh, at the moment?
I'm just doing this because I enjoy talking to you and to other people. Like, I'm not really looking for it to necessarily go anywhere, although it's super exciting because it seems like it is kind of growing and getting somewhere, even without us really trying, which is really amazing. I think it's more about navigating, you know, certain guests that we have, and just, you know, making sure that, you know, they're not taking over, or like that everybody kind of has a say and that kind of thing. So I feel like it's more about that right now for us.
Yeah, it is a fine line. I think it's also, I think it's hard, I think, at the beginning stages, especially with the marketing side of things, just because it's like, you literally have, you know, it's like completely fresh slate. And also, like, you know, who are we? Like, we're not... We're not anyone really at the
Speak
moment.
Speak for yourself.
Like,
no, I'm just kidding.
Sorry, Snesh. I apologize.
Everybody is somebody. It's that's the thing that I think a lot of, again, not even just actors, but human beings don't give themselves credit for, in terms of thinking, you know, oh, who am I to... Actors struggle a lot with putting stuff out on social media because they don't know what to put out. They feel they've got to put out, like, produced, polished stuff. Everything has to be like a full scene, or has to be a performance or something like that. And I love observing other people's lives, so I'd love to see like what happened behind the scenes for 10 minutes before, like today, before I even jumped onto this call and you guys were setting up, and what you were talking about, you know, just sort of like documenting behind the scenes of a process. I like that sort of thing. I think actors need to show more of like the behind the scenes of their career and document over. There's a guy called Gary Vee who talks about documenting over creating all the time. It's like, don't think that everything you have to put out, you know, as an actor, it doesn't have to be a headshot or a showreel scene. How boring would your social media be if everything you put out, here's another headshot of me? Like, you know, share the rehearsal process, or like crowdfunding your film, or, you know, like learning a script, self-tapes that go wrong, I think, are really funny. Some of the bloopers you see of people doing self-tapes.
Oh my God, I just die. Great. I love those. I absolutely love those. To be honest, they're far more entertaining. I know it sounds really bad, but Did you see the one where there was a cat that kept jumping on the actor? That I literally, I don't know if, oh, I should send it to you, Snesh, because this cat was like, it would just literally come
out of
nowhere.
Just wanted to be in the tape, didn't it? Jump up the guy.
Yeah. And it was constant. Like, and I was just like, it just found it funnier and funnier and funnier. So I really love those kind of things. I think not taking yourself too seriously is probably like the way to go. I have to ask, because I've wanted to know this, like, since starting watching webinars with you like a while ago, why do you have a picture of a monkey behind you?
Oh my God, I was going to ask that question. I was going to say, why do you have a framed picture of a chimpanzee?
I mean, do you know what?
I'm just so glad that it is actually a monkey and not like, oh no, this is, and I'd be like, oh, yeah,
this
shit.
Is my, this is my dead monkey pet. No, this is the remembering by. I wish there was like a really great story behind it. So basically, there is no story behind this. When I was doing more stuff on camera like this, and I was doing like a weekly show, like back, you know, even before kind of, I guess before I did anything on Zoom, because everything used to be podcast, but I guess the Monday Night Live broadcast that I do on Facebook, I used to just have two posters in the background, and I thought it just looks a bit dull. So again, IKEA always saves the day. You go and get your Billy bookshelf. It's called Billy, this one, white bookshelf. I don't know if you've got a video on this podcast, if it's just going to be audio, but Billy is a great product from IKEA. And as I was picking up Billy, I noticed some picture frames, black picture frames that were a bargain. They're about £2. And I thought, oh, I've got nothing to put in them. Next to the black picture frames in IKEA were pictures you could put in your frames. And there was just a pack of monkeys. And I just love monkeys. I think they just look dead cute. I thought, yeah. I'll have that one. There's literally no backstory to that at all of any importance, but just IKEA yet again. The plant there, that's from IKEA. That's fake.
Yeah, brilliant.
That's not. Do you know what sometimes people do sometimes? Some of my mates go, right, I've bought you something. I want you to put it on your shelf so it's in all your videos, just like so they know that they've got something in there. My mate Rob bought me the most horrendous model of Blackpool Tower. It's got absolutely no, obviously no connection to the acting industry or anything whatsoever. But it was like, if you don't put that on your shelf in every broadcast, I'll be massively offended. So now I have to put that there.
Blimey.
Other things. John Lewis, remember the advert? Snagia. I'm trying to get your name right.
Snagia.
You were John Lewis. You won't have John Lewis over there. It's a department store we have over here. This was John Lewis's Christmas advert a couple of years ago, a dragon that sets fires for everything. And it's all very sad because no one likes him because he sets fire to stuff. But then he saves the day because he lights the Christmas pudding in the end. My mate bought me that. Basically, it's all just gifts that people buy me and they just go, if you don't put that on your shelf in the background so I know it's in every video and your audience won't know what it is, then I hate you. So I go, I feel guilty and go, right, I'll put them all in there. And that's it. Got mugs.
See, if more people hear about this, then people are probably going to send you
sending
more
stuff,
like,
aren't they?
Yeah, like loads of crap, to be honest. And you're just going to have this like weird hickledy pickledy tat shelf behind.
Oh, that's
you.
What it is, basically. Some people like when I'm on podcasts, they send me a promotional mug from their podcast, and I put that on the shelf. That's two lines in Doctors. We've got a show over here called Doctors, and Steve Connolly, a member of Acts on This, he does a podcast called Two Lines in Doctors because that's what he wants in his career. He only wants, you know, he just wants two lines in Doctors. So he's like, look, I'm not asking for the world. So that's that. So yeah, there's a whole heap of junk on the bookshelves and books as well. Some of them I've read,
of course.
Some of them I've not. But if you've got a load of books in the background, you look dead intelligent. So
dead intelligent. Too right. Cool. No, I love it. I just had to ask. What I'm going to do, because obviously we are still recording, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to just do the whole goodbye thing and then... And then I'll stop it, so then we can still keep talking whilst it kind of uploads. But I giving you the thing.
So that's cool. the story of the shelves.
That's the story of the shelves, and I love it. It's brilliant. Perfect. Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for like spending some of your valuable time on a Saturday.
It's not that
very
valuable.
Very very pleased. Is it? But okay.
You need to get back to mum. We don't know what
My mum could be on the floor. She couldn't, you know. She's not at that age yet where you go, mum's had a fall. She's not at that age yet, thankfully. Oh, no. But what if she was FaceTiming me to go, Ross, help me? And I went, no, cancel.
Yeah. Cancel. I'm on
I'm doing the podcast here. So like, if you want to just, you know, FaceTime me later on, that's fine. But I will definitely get back to her at some point. But no, it's been a pleasure, honestly. Brilliant. Best of luck with it all, and like, any, if I can help you with anything, or obviously I'll promote this. Make sure you tag Acts on This in any promotion. I'll retweet it to all of the Acts on This crew. Post it in the Facebook group and all that sort of stuff. And hopefully we can get actors listening, and then we'll all come over to Vancouver and we'll all work on the millions of shows over there.
Brilliant. Definitely. Sounds good. Sounds awesome. Brilliant. Well, how about if we all say goodbye on three? Is that okay?
Oh, yeah. What do you want to do? What do you normally do?
We can preamble it.
I normally do bye for now.
You do. I think you should still keep with whatever you want to do. You can do bye. Actually, should we all say bye
Let's
for
all
now?
Say bye for now.
That's a very act on this thing.
Should I do the countdown?
Let's do it. Yeah, go for it.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Loads of love. Until next time, 3, 2, 1.
Bye for now.
Yes.
I love it. Oh, so seamless. Right, cool. I've stopped it. It's-